and put those searchlights up on the towers right now. Move, move.
I listen to 2ARM 92.1 FM in the car and at work for great tunes and community news.
Hello, I'm Herb and welcome to Community Spotlight. Every Friday I invite somebody to come in to either talk about their journey or an organisation or an establishment. And this week I have the Armidale City Council Folk Museum. Good morning, Lamb.
Good morning, Herb. Thank you very much for having me.
Now tell me, how long have you been in Armidale, Lamb?
So I'm a pretty newcomer still. I've been here for about 2 years, I would say.
And what's your role with the Folk Museum?
So my official title is the Arts, Culture and Heritage Officer. Basically just means that I am the collections manager, the curator of our Folk Museum in town, and then the Hillgrove Museum as well.
Yes, I've been to the Hillgrove Museum a couple of times, taking the kids out there back in the day. Arts, culture and heritage. Now, what sort of department does that fit in under council?
So I sit under the customer experience banner, who also includes the visitor information centre, the library, other community spaces effectively.
So let's talk about the museum. Now, I see on the plaque for the museum, it says 1859... Armidale School of Arts. Now, what was the Armidale School of Arts in 1859?
So the School of Arts was, it was a really early form of what we see today as TAFE. It was a place where people could go and get training. They could receive vocational experience on a number of different topics. And so the original location of the museum was that institute where they could learn.
Was it called the Armidale School of Arts and Mechanics?
Armidale School of Arts and Mechanics, which is an interesting combination, but clearly it's what the town was calling for at the time, and so the building provided that function.
So you had to become a member, I suppose, to get the vocational training?
Certainly did, yes. So it was a member space. We actually are very proud in the Folk Museum because the building itself is considered to be the oldest public use building in Armidale. But yes, at the time, that was a members-only space, and it was a reading room and a meeting place for people who consider themselves to be members of that institute.
So I've also got another date there, 1863. What does that relate to?
So that was when the foundation stone of the building as we see it today was first laid. So that the earlier date, it was a smaller, less substantial building than it currently is today.
So that's the establishment of the existing building that we've got now?
That's correct.
Then we've got 1915 at as the Literary Institute.
Again, very similar. It was at that location for training, and we've moved on from arts and mechanics, and we've moved into that more of a library and reading space, but still a place for people to go and learn skills.
Same sort of purpose, same sort of building, just a different slant.
Exactly
right. That was used. 1933.
1933 was the date that the original museum was actually established. So it was in a different building that we currently sit in now. It's just down the road. So currently, of course, the Folk Museum building is on that corner of Rusden and Faulkner Streets. But the 1933 museum was just down the road, closer to where the current council building sits today.
And we've got the last date, 1958.
That's when the museum, as people in Armidale would recognise it, was really properly established. So our illustrious founder, Eric Dunlop, got everything set up and moved that original collection from 1933 across to where we currently sit.
Generally, the purpose prior to 1958 of a museum was to highlight the important people in the community.
Yes, that's right.
But there was a push then after that period to actually focus on community. Who made our community? The teachers, the workers, that type of thing?
Yes, absolutely. So that was Eric Dunlop. That was his big passion, was this movement away from museums being, like you said, the place where you would show off all of the armour and fancy stuff, particularly in England. So for most of history, museums were places to celebrate the big important people in the world. But Eric Dunlop, he didn't agree with that, and I agree with him that it's more important for a museum to tell a story about the little people too, and the people who did honest jobs in a place like Armidale.
It's an interesting point that you bring up, because what I've tried to do with Community Spotlight is to draw people and organisations from our community that have contributed to our community. And often what I find is it's the quiet achievers that have got
absolutely
a great story and have done so much, but they've just sort of beavered away in the background and made they're the glue that holds our community mm-hmm. together.
Absolutely,
so
right.
I think it's great that the Folk Museum looks to focus on those people. Go back to Eric Dunlop. Now, he was a teacher, we think, at the...
I believe at the Teachers College.
Somebody so, might like to check.
Yes, please fact check. But yes, he was an educator, and he really brought that to the Folk Museum as well.
And he was on the board of the National Museum in Canberra.
Yes, he was. So he was one of the foundational figures of that National Museum movement internationally. So he was one of the big names in Australia, and he was really important to getting our big National Museum in Canberra established, which is a really interesting link to our capital from here.
Yeah, I'd like to know more about Eric Dunlop. I might do some research about sort of how long he was in Armidale and that type of thing. That'd be interesting.
Someone wrote a really interesting paper, which of course I don't have in front of me, but if you search his name on the internet, you'll find some really interesting information about the man.
So it's Eric Dunlop.
Eric Dunlop.
Now, interestingly, we've got 1958, so we had motor cars, but mm-hmm. he bought a whole lot of different things in from a previous past, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yes, he brought in a number of objects, like we mentioned before, really trying to tell that story of the workers of the town. So he brought in lots of carriages, really interesting big pieces that you can still see in the museum today, but a very different mode of transport, particularly from what they were using at the time, of course. Like you say, motor cars were the big thing. But yeah, tell the story of the horse and carriage. Probably one of the more interesting and exciting pieces that we have in the collection is the carriage that belonged to the White family who owned Bulimimba. We've got one of theirs.
Oh, very good. Buggies, and I think there was a mineral collection that mm-hmm. he was given.
Absolutely, yes. So mineral collection was donated to the original museum in 1933. It was actually bequeathed in a deceased estate by a man of the name Alfred Pike, who was a prolific mineral collector in the region, and I believe he actually had his own little museum display out at Mittagong. And then when he passed away, fantastic for the town, because we got his fantastic collection.
Well, it's no surprise, though, that New England has a lot of rare earths mm-hmm. across the escarpment. Different Absolutely. Mines, different people have not only gold, but other rare earths and minerals.
Yes, we have quite a number of sapphires in the collection, which I believe there's a fair bit of fossicking people can do out in Verolway. And there's a lot of sapphires in the ground over that way.
No, definitely. That's a fantastic thing to do with the kids mm-hmm. coming up to school holiday. Absolutely. School holidays have started now, going out to Inverell. I remember taking my kids. They love going out and fossicking at the different places that are set up out at Inverell. It's a real thriving little tourist business out there.
It certainly is. Certainly is.
Great afternoon, and it's not far from Armidale.
No, and it's a lovely, lovely drive. We've got a lot of lovely drives around here.
Horseshoes.
Horseshoes, yes.
Tell me about horseshoes.
So, of course, Armidale being a agricultural and a small town where lots of workers did their work, and so one of the really interesting exports was horseshoes. There was an old blacksmith's, understand it was near where the White Bull currently sits, and there's a family of smithies out there, and they produced a fantastic array of horseshoes, oxen shoes, etc., and it was of such quality and of such note that at one point it was taken out to London as part of a early 20th century exhibition to show off what the people of this region could do.
That was important in those days.
It was, yeah, even out here.
Yes, yes. You've got lots of material.
Mm-hmm.
And how often do you change over the material?
So currently it's probably not quite as much as we would really like, but we have such a large collection and we've got so many different objects. I'd like to start seeing some of that start to roll over a little bit more.
Let's just move to Hillgrove for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So Council looks after Hillgrove Museum. Tell us about Hillgrove Museum.
Hillgrove Museum, it's got a little bit of a mouthful of a name. It's the Hillgrove Museum of Rural Life and Industry. Similar to Armidale, it was a very agricultural centre. So we've got a fantastic display of all sorts of farm machinery, potato pullers, things of that nature, which is really interesting. But the museum itself is located in the old public school. So we've got a little school display in there as well to celebrate the education of the region, along with, again, a little bit like the Folk Museum, a slightly broad collection of objects that has just accumulated over the last, gosh, nearly 100 years.
Is it much about mining or is it more about the rural area out there?
So it's probably a bit of an even split. There is all of the rural, but of course Hillgrove being such a prominent mining settlement with the Garra Gorge and all of the mines out that way. So we do have a bit mining collection, and lots of the fantastic mining companies who have set up shop over time have actually donated some of their obsolete and out-of-date objects to the museum as well, which is very interesting.
And again, another drive, we talked about Inverell just then, but another great drive out from Armidale during the school holidays is to Hillgrove. 20, 25 minutes, depending which way you take it.
Yes.
When is it open?
The Hillgrove Museum is open Friday through Monday. There are occasional little hiccups because our fantastic volunteering team, the ones that open and close the space. But yes, absolutely well worth taking a drive out over the weekend, particularly in this current incredible weather that we are having before it gets too cold.
Is it free entry?
Free entry. We always appreciate a donation, but it's absolutely not expected to either of the museums.
Just to get a bit of history about Hillgrove, Eleanora Township is what Hillgrove used to be called, after the antimony mine that was nearly a decade in operation from 1876, and basically the sole reason for its existence. And Hillgrove was given the name to the town in 1888. So for 88 years it was known as Eleanora because of the mining of antimony.
Indeed, yes.
So, yeah, and Baker's Creek Gorge, obviously. So as you drive out to Hillgrove to go to the museum, there's Baker's Creek Gorge, the waterfalls. There's a lookout there you can have a look at.
Beautiful bushwalking if visitors are interested in doing that as well. There's plenty of opportunities to do that.
Can we get any coffee or tea out there?
Unfortunately not. There is no little store out there because, yes, it is just that small little village community, not quite like Wollumombi with the little general store. Maybe one day. We'll see.
Well, maybe you just take a step back in time and take a thermos.
Yes, indeed.
And a packed lunch and morning tea like we used to do back in the day before there was coffee shops springing up in every coffee carts and coffee wagons. If you're going to go to Hillgrove, take coffee, tea in your thermos and your lunch.
And the museum has some beautiful picnic tables underneath the shade of one of the trees out the front, so it is the perfect spot to bring your packed lunch and have your cup of tea.
Perfect. Well, we'll solve that problem. Let's move on to World War One. Tell me about the museum in relation to World War One.
Certainly. So that first museum in the 30s, I think the First World War was very fresh on people's minds. They really wanted to remember it and make a record of it. And so we had reasonably substantial collection of First World War material from that original display. One of the beautiful objects that we've currently got on display is a pillowcase that was made by cousin of a young man who died overseas, talking about how proud they were of his service.
And a lot of artifacts would have been given, or World War One things that they bought back would have given the museum just to get them out of the house, I suppose.
Certainly, yes. I think, as I said, it was living very large in people's memories, and a lot of people had very bad memories of their experiences overseas, and it was probably a really good opportunity to, like you say, get them out of the house, make sure you're not reliving those memories every time you open your cupboard. Or
so they're in storage mostly, but there's a few things out there that people can see. Now, World War II, was that sort of similar?
It was very similar, and definitely the same sort of impression made on people. So we've got, again, a substantial collection of World War II material, lots of uniforms of soldiers, beautiful uniform of a nurse from Armidale. Yes, substantial collection, some lovely objects.
So that leads us to Anzac Day, the 25th of April.
It certainly is coming very quick.
You've got a bit of a event and things that are going on from the 14th, which is Monday. Tell me about that.
So we've put on a small new display and a little exhibition in one of our temporary gallery rooms. So we've got some of that World War One and World War Two material out for visitors to come and have a look at. But the big draw for this time is poppy folding activity. So one of our fantastic staff members, Eva, she's created this brilliant program where people can come in and fold some poppies. For me, I will probably want to put the name of some of my relatives who were involved overseas on the back of that poppy, and then we'll hang them up around that room in the museum for people to come and have a look at.
So that's opened on Monday. All that activity's open on Monday.
Yes.
It's free to go in, although you can make a donation to go in. And how long does it run to? Right through?
So right through until Anzac Day, and then that's on that day we'll put them all up around the museum properly so people can see them.
So that's Monday to Friday, or weekends or not?
Yes, including weekends. The only day we're closed is a Tuesday, and that's for our collections work. But besides that, the Folk Museum is open 11 until 2.
And Sundays?
And Sundays, yes.
Oh, great. Loose end and you've got the kids or even just yourself want to get into some poppy folding or see what's going on in the museum, you can go down corner of Rusden and Faulkner.
Rusden and Faulkner, yes. And we have a beautiful building if people aren't aware of it. Look for the beautiful veranda. That's where our front door is.
Free entry. Now, who runs the museum, the Armidale Museum?
So the museum is run by myself and a couple of staff members, the assistance of some incredible volunteers who put in a lot of hard work.
Volunteers, they're worth their weight in gold.
Oh my God, we couldn't get anything done without them.
It'd be a remiss if we didn't call out for more volunteers to come on board.
Certainly, we can always use more. You say they're a finite resource, but we will take our share if people are willing to come in and volunteer their time. Currently, our two fantastic volunteers do a lot of behind-the-scenes work. So if you'd like to do behind-the-scenes work at the museum, please come along, but also front of house work. We're taking everyone who could come. Yep, very happy for that.
And how do we do that?
Please swing by my office, which is just in the museum itself, and I can have a chat and show you around and give you some boring paperwork to fill out if you'd like to join us.
Does the museum have like a little tour? Like if you go in and you can obviously look at it yourself, but is there somebody there that you can ask questions of? And
absolutely. Our staff members are really, really fantastic. They've got a lot of knowledge. And yes, please, if you come by, have a chat with the person behind the front counter and they'll be able to point out the highlights and give you some of the history of the collection and the building itself as well.
So we've got two museums. We've got the Hillgrove Museum, which is 25 minutes out. We've got this museum, which is just down in the corner of Faulkner and Rusden. Both free entry or a donation is fine as well. Volunteers are a big part of it, but we also have Liam and his crew looking after the exhibitions. Would you like to see the future of exhibitions at the museum?
The future of exhibitions, I think the main thing for me is I would really like to start seeing a little bit of changeover. I mentioned earlier that we've got such a substantial collection in our storerooms, and I would really, really love to see all of that material come out and see the light of day a little bit more than it currently does. So we just get in there and change some of these displays over and bring new life into the space, which will, of course, encourage people to come back as well. We've had so many visitors who come to the museum and say, oh, I came when I was in primary school, was part of a school group, but they also often say that some of the collection is still on display, so they're not surprised to see what they do when they come in.
So you've got some plans for renovations?
We certainly do, yes. We've got some grant money, which will allow us to do some excellent work. Got a disability and access grant. So that will allow us to move our front door to a slightly better location for people who might be in wheelchairs or have limited mobility. Also are going to get some toilets installed in the museum the first time in, 150, 160 years. So it'll be a great addition. I'm really looking forward to it.
So disabled access toilets. Will you, under that grant, do anything for displays?
So we would like to, of course, as part of this, we'll have to close the museum for a very short amount of time, hopefully. And then while we're closed, we would love to get in and start to do a bit of a revamp, start to do that changeover of exhibitions to revitalise the space.
So, further on the track, what about interpretive type hands-on displays, multimedia, using a bit of tech that you see in the other museums in the larger cities? What's your thoughts about that?
Oh, I am all for museum digitization and renewal. So part of a separate grant, we've got the money, we've got some iPads, and which we'll be able to put some content on. If you come and have a look at our poppy folding, we actually will have one of those iPads out with a beautiful book that you'll be able to flip through that's very sensitive to light. So it's an opportunity to get some of those more sensitive things out onto display. But we've also got a fantastic touch table, so a big touch screen that we'll be able to put a variety of different forms of content on, to be determined. And then we would really love to get some 3D printing done and to make some really hands-on objects so that particularly little kids who want to really have a really tactile experience, they can come in and they can play with objects and they can feel how they would actually feel rather than just looking at them through the glass.
I think what I've seen in other museums that really works effectively is those digital storytelling with the projectors, mm-hmm. you know, onto a onto a wall or a screen or whatever, and people can actually absorb from the digital story that's coming through the projector.
Certainly.
What a great, fantastic things the exhibitions are. Mm. The whole story, even just the story that we've talked about how the museum came to life, that would be a fantastic digital story.
Certainly, yes. And we do have a projector as part of this grant as well. So it's just a matter of figuring out the best way to tell these stories, of course. But yes, to be able to blast a big image onto a wall or have a video running in the background with information about the history of X concept or Y concept. Yes, great opportunities to do that with all these new technologies.
Well, that's been great, Liam. I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you for coming in to Spotlight.
Absolute pleasure.
And bringing the Folk Museum with you. You've got a fountain of knowledge, even though you've only been here 1.5 years in this position.
Yes, very new, but I'm learning a lot as I go, and something great about this community is they are so willing to share and to help and to explain different concepts, particularly to someone like me who's still a little bit fresh. But yes, it's been fantastic.
And you came from Bathurst and you did a bit of work down at the Bathurst Museum.
Certainly, yes. I worked for their team at Museums Bathurst. So I worked at their Fossil and Mineral Museum and their Railway Museum. So it's a little bit different up here, but I think the skills transfer pretty nicely.
No, I definitely think so. So we've got the Folk Museum. Get out there and have a look at it over the school holidays, both in Hillgrove and in Armidale. Maybe go out to Inverell and do some sapphire fox skin while you're there. Get out into this great climate that we've got up here in the New England fall in the autumn. The Folk Museum is a gem within our community, so let's get out and use it. And that's Community Spotlight.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.